Podtacular episode 385, Spartan Assault, for August 1st, 2013. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm.
And I'm your other host, Brent Gamer.
And we are here to talk about some Spartan Assault this week. As you guys know, it came out a couple of weeks ago on the Windows 8 platforms, and I have been able to upgrade one of my computers that I have and play it. So it's been interesting over the last 2 days getting to play that game and going through some of the frustrations of going through quite a few of the levels, and then there were some other levels that were just really simple and easy to do. So this game kind of has a varying of difficulties throughout it all. But we have someone here, kind of a blast from the past, in a way, to kind of help us talk through Spartan Assault. And that is Facehead. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, what's up, guys?
It's been such a long time since we even heard the name around these parts.
Yeah. I know. Well, yeah, it's you know, I check in every once in a while.
Every once in a while, yeah.
Yeah, I do a bit of reading, you know, listening.
Okay.
Not a lot of posting, but you know, I'm there.
So what are you up to these days, mostly?
You know, right now I'm just, you know, home from school. I'm studying film and computer science, so you know, just taking it easy, playing some games.
Wow. Film and computer science.
Yeah. We'll see how well that works out.
You got your peanut butter in my chocolate.
You got your
chocolate in my peanut butter.
Is that something where you're like double majoring?
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out, really. You know, because I realized I really like computers and I don't know how they work. So that seems interesting. And I really like to do film, but it doesn't seem that interesting. So I'm kind of figuring out which one to, you know, pursue full force.
I see. Heck, you might be able to do the best of both worlds and go to Adobe and actually write the software for it.
Hey, yeah, that would be pretty cool because, you know, Premiere does need some work.
Yeah, it kind of does. Well, it's nice to have you back on the show, dude. It's been, as we were talking in pre-show, last show you were on was episode 201, which was a computer versus console debate. We haven't had one of those in a while. So I think the argument's been kind of mute at this point because there are certain benefits to computers and certain benefits to consoles. But of course, we're not here to talk about that today. No, 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 no. We're here to talk about the latest bulletin update and Spartan Assault. So let's go ahead and hit some details up on the Halo bulletin, shall we? Of course, we still have the Halo 4 championship going on, and we are in week 3. And this week was Infinity Rumble, so there are the two game types. There is the Infinity Rumble and then the Infinity Rumble BR. So I actually didn't play any games last week. I didn't play any games this week. Have you two played any games from the Global Championship?
I haven't.
Neither have I.
All right. Is it something that's even remote interest to you?
For me, I mean, I like watching it. I really like how Halo 4 has adopted AGL, right?
Uh-huh.
Or is it ALG?
Yep, AGL.
I like it a lot better than MLG. So, you know, there's that. And I've paid attention to it. I watched some of the championship at RTX when I was watching online. And, you know, I mean, hey, people look really good.
Yeah, there's some talented people out there. And there were quite a few pros out there at RTX, but it was nice to see that half of the other winners were non quote unquote pro, like they weren't regularly playing in competitive leagues. So there is somewhat of a glimmer of hope for those people that are good at Halo, but don't really have that spotlight in the professional area of Halo. So that's kind of a good little glimmer of a silver lining around some of the other issues that have come up. And our friends over at Go Beyond Entertainment actually posted a video this week, and there's actually a sign-out glitch for people being able to not get docked a loss. So if you're in the lobby where it's still loading the map, you can actually sign out, and then you can sign back in, and it will not count as a loss against you. Now, 343 has said, and they've said this last week, and they said it this week, that they are looking through players' behavior, player history, and seeing if it the people at the top of the list are truly legitimate winners. So they still have not released the finalists from the first week because they want to make absolutely sure that the top four legitimately got there. So it is kind of a tedious process at this point, but we are kind of looking at a fair competition when everything is said and done. So if you're playing well, if you're a lot better than me and probably the rest of us in here, and you make it up there in the top 10 or so, don't give out hope, because there is a possibility that you will still be in there, even if there are like other cheaters that have somehow permeated in there. So they'll probably just knock those out and then go with the 5th, 6th, 7th place until they have a 4 that actually legitimately got there.
Yeah.
So not much to worry about, really. But the current leaders for week 3, for at least the top 10, are LikeSelf996165, has played 58 games so far. Z4Zeus with 56 games. Bifocus with 42 games. Grayish Self 3 with 37 games. Crazy with 34 games. Countless Lake 4 with 34 games. Arxno Bieber with 33 games. Harp Tanks for 29 games. Bouncy Alarm 614 with 27 games. And Smelly Asteroid 7 with 27 games. So definitely not as many games being played in the later weeks as it was the first week. I remember when the bulletin was out, there were people already, I think, like in with 80 games or so under their belt.
Yep.
So it definitely seems like it's slowing down a little bit, which means that it's probably going to give you a little more chance of actually getting up there if your skills are on top of everyone else. So definitely try to focus on playing in these last few weeks, because the first week you have the hype. The last week you'll probably have an influx come in. So this week and next week are probably the best two opportunities for people to come in and actually place. So yep. Definitely check that out.
Can I point something out real quick?
Yes.
Ranks 6 through 10, all of those people have the same emblem, just different color. Fun facts.
So you know what that might mean, though? Because that's the default emblem, those may be second accounts.
Yep.
And possibly. There have been tweets that have gone around, there have been people that have talked about this, but there are pros that are going out there and making second accounts. I think 343 is going to play it smart here and realize that some of those accounts are going to belong to people that have already played. And I'm hoping they have I'm hoping they're coordinating with Xbox to see, okay, are these two gamer tags from the same console when they're being played?
Yeah.
Or the same IP? I would think they're smart enough to look into that kind of detail with something that's as big as a $200,000 first place prize.
You know, looking at, you know, how 343 has gone about, you know, the entirety of Halo 4, I wouldn't be worried about it. I mean, they take very small, you know, critique from people and they put that in updates. So I wouldn't be worried about that at all.
Right. So we should be good. Week 4 is coming up very soon around the corner. We'll get to that in a minute. For those that don't know or haven't heard yet, the finals of the Halo 4 Global Championship are actually going to be at PAX. It's going to be August 30th through September 1st, and that is the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So for people that were, I know a few people were worried about possibly having games to play on Monday, you will not have to worry about that. The competition only goes from the Friday to the Sunday, so that's good for people that were planning on leaving on Monday. So you don't have to sweat about that at all. I will be there covering it. I hope I get my media badge. I did put in my application for it this week. So I hope I can get it and get coverage in there. If not, I'm going to call in a favor, hopefully, from 343 and be like, you mind hooking me up? If possible. But we'll see. We will be there nonetheless. I will have my camera, even if I don't have a media badge. But there shouldn't be any reason I shouldn't get a media badge with something as big as this. We are going to be in the Benaria Hall. Is that how you say that?
I have no clue.
Some fancy really looking hall. If you're
Benaria Hall.
If you've seen the bulletin for this week, this thing looks freaking amazing.
Oh yeah, it's cool looking.
And they will be live streaming the entire weekend, I'm sure, on Twitch. So even if you're not there in person, you will be able to watch the finalist or the finals going into it. And I'm guessing, since it's only probably going to be 64 players there, you're going to see every single game streamed. That'd be my guess. Because I don't think they would pull people in, especially during PAX, and not let people go play or play around, look around the convention and all that stuff. So I bet we're going to see every single game in the tournament played, which would be really cool because that is a lot of good Halo to watch. I'm personally excited to go in and watch this and report on it. This is going to be, I mean, AGL has gotten huge, but for something as big as this and 343 is throwing it on and everything, it's going to be very interesting to watch.
Yep.
Especially with it being, you know, linked with PAX and everything, you know, that's a huge step.
It's a big deal.
And it makes me wonder, like, what other kind of stuff they're going to do with PAX in the years down the road, because they had Halo Fest, that was with PAX Prime, and of course PAX Prime is in their backyard. They're Seattle based. PAX Prime is Seattle, so it's kind of the perfect time when people are already coming together for gaming related stuff to just go ahead and do the event there. But if they're doing this tournament now, I wonder if they're going to do something again next year or the year after, because this is just, they said this was a summer championship, and that implies that there may be other seasons of champion or tournament styles down the line.
Can you imagine a $1 million tournament?
I don't think
for a smooth mill.
I don't think video games are quite on that caliber yet, where you're going to see payouts as big as a million for one person.
Right now, we're up to 200,000. I mean, it's only going to get bigger. Gaming isn't going down in size. I mean, the gaming industry keeps growing. I mean, at this point, it's kind of pillaring out, but it's not really, you know, dying off. I completely suspect competitive gaming to only get larger over time. I don't think it's going to die off like some people say it is.
Oh, no, it will grow. It will definitely grow. I'm trying to debate whether or not it's going to be as big as athletic sports, or if it might even overtake it someday.
Well, I mean, at some point, you know, basketball was pretty new. I mean, that's one of our newest modern sports that's really popular, and they probably never expected that they would have something like the NBA. I'm just saying, like, at this point, yeah, but I can totally see the gaming industry getting to a point where we could have a $1 million tournament for, like, the biggest games. It might be Call of Duty or something, but there is definitely going to be a $1 million tournament out there somewhere, sometime.
I would not be surprised if either Microsoft or Sony themselves jump in and offer that to push maybe the new consoles. You know, if you had a Halo 5 $1 million tournament, that's going to push sales, you know, of people like, hey, you know, especially, you know, people who are staying back, you know, like, oh, I'll just keep on playing this, you know, tournaments are still here. If they push a $1 million tournament that's, you know, new box exclusive, you know, that might just push some console sales and, you know, get more people into it.
Yeah. Well, now that I think about it, they already had a contest in one of the old MLB games. I don't remember which year it was, but I think it was like 2007 or 2008. Oh, yeah.
Pitch the perfect game.
Yeah, they've done that again since then, but the first time they did it, it was for $1 million. Now, this time around, I think it was only like 100,000, but that first time was definitely a mill, if I remember.
Yeah, it was.
Correctly, yeah.
And so, they were surprised when someone actually did it.
Yeah. I mean, they shouldn't have been surprised. Anytime you put out a challenge in a video game, eventually someone's going to fix it. I mean, they're going to do it.
Right.
I mean, given that it's not an actual impossible task within the game, like, you just cannot do it without cheating, eventually somebody will do it.
Yeah. Someone will put the time and effort into doing all those hours into one game.
Yeah, especially for $1 million,
yeah,
you know, before taxes.
I mean, if you look at what people do for Halo with AGL, that's still a lot of time and dedication to put it in for that. And it's not like a substantial amount of money. It's not as much as MLG was offering, but AGL is definitely growing in popularity. This last AGL, they actually hit over 8,000 viewers on the stream at once. So the viewership for AGL keeps on growing, and it's actually very cool to see that community still thrive since they got dropped from MLG and continue to keep on finding supporters, finding Halo players that are willing to go out there, support it, help out whenever they can, and compete. So huge shout-outs to those guys over at AGL, because they're doing a great thing for competitive Halo. And I'm hoping that at some point down the line, Microsoft might even look at kind of helping AGL out, because there were a few times where Bungie was sponsoring stuff for MLG. Like, Britton, when you and I were there, they were showing off ODSTs, and they were sponsoring that piece of MLG, so...
Oh, yeah.
It's definitely possible for Microsoft to come down and back AGL for a tournament or so.
Especially
like for the finals.
Yeah, well, especially since, you know, I think a big thing a lot of people had against MLG was the community and mindset of a lot of the players. I knew that drove me away. I hated it. But, you know, I think with ALG or AGL or whatever, it's a fresh start, you know, kind of be like, hey, you know, we're not the complete, you know, jerks that would, you know, ruin everything. You know, we like playing seriously, but, you know, we're still going to be, you know, cool about everything.
Right. So moving on to the update for next week's Global Championship, there's lots of things in here. It's Rumble Grab Bag, so it's no longer just Slayer. We have a little more variety in here. It's still free for all, of course, so you still kind of have that Slayer-ish mentality, but we have some newer game types included in here. So we got FFA, King of the Hill. We have FFA Oddball. We have UNSC Slayer, Covenant Slayer, and Forerunner Slayer. And they actually have a nice little table up on Waypoint for this week saying what game type and what map combinations there are. So all the maps that are going to be available throughout this playlist are Haven, Solace, Abandoned, Adrift, Skyline, Monolith, and Landfall, all of which have been pretty much included in the past weeks of play for the Global Championship. But in terms of what game types are going to be on what map, King of the Hill is going to be on every single map. Oddball is going to be played on Haven, Abandoned, and Skyline. UNSC Slayer is going to be on Haven, Abandoned, Adrift, Skyline, and Landfall. Covenant Slayer will be on Haven and Abandon, and Forerunner Slayer will be Haven, Solace, Adrift, and Monolith.
Sweet.
And for the loadouts for the Slayer game types, this is what we're breaking them down to. We have the UNSC Slayer. Loadout is the Battle Rifle, primary, Assault Rifle, secondary, two grenades, frag, no armor ability, tactical package is resupply, and support upgrade is explosives. Covenant Slayer, you have the carbine as primary, storm rifle secondary, two plasma grenades, and then resupply explosives. And then Forerunner Slayer is light rifle, primary, suppressor secondary, and with two pulse grenades.
Everybody loves pulse grenades.
They're the
so
best.
Ever since that achievement came out for the Majestic map pack, that's when I started to finally understand how the pulse grenade works.
Yeah, I
it seems
can use
like, it seems like once that achievement came out, once that map pack came out, a lot more people got good at using that pulse grenade. Or at least that's what it seems like.
I don't think that you're really ever good with it. I mean, you can use it successfully to, you know, enhance your ability to shoot people in the head, but just generally, if you have a choice between a frag or even the plasma grenade and a pulse grenade, I'm always going to go with the frag or the plasma. I mean, that's just classic Halo. I mean, the problem with the pulse grenade is that it doesn't deplete shields fast enough. I think that the way they could probably, you know, buff that up a little bit is to just increase the speed that it deplenishes your shield. But other than that, you know, I mean, I've definitely used them more since that achievement came out, but they're just still kind of third rate, in my opinion.
Right. Okay, so the settings for the Oddball and King of the Hill game types are thus. We have Oddball is 150 points to win, 12-minute time limit, one ball, static spawning, 1 point per second for carry. It is automatic pickup, and you do have the waypoint over your head whenever you're carrying the ball. You have a respawn of 5 seconds, suicide penalty of 3 seconds, no death cam, no personal ordnance, and you do have motion tracker. So that is Oddball. And then for King of the Hill, score to win, again, 150 points, 12-minute time limit. You have 30 seconds for the hill, 25-point limit per each hill. That doesn't make sense. Hill point limit, hill time limit? Okay, that's interesting. I didn't know it was like that. So each hill, I guess, is up for 30 seconds, and you can only get a max of 25 points per hill. Hmm. That's strange.
That is weird. Hmm.
Interesting. Okay. Well, scoring style is only one person can be in the hill to score at a time, so it's not multiple scoring with people in the hill. Again, I said the hill moves on a 30-second timer. You have 5-second respawn, 3-second suicide penalty. Motion tracker is the same. It's enabled. So that is going to be the game types and maps for the Global Championship for week number 4. This is Rumble Grab Bag, throwing some objective stuff in there. So for everyone that's a little bit more inclined on the objective side, this is the week to play. This is where you want to come in and really show your skills off. You have a few other things up here in terms of like Global Championship invites, and this is, I think, may kind of piss some people off because it gives the pros yet another edge in participating in the event. So they have, or 343 has come out and said that they were going to, or apparently they said before that they were going to invite some people out for this tournament. And they are actually taking a look at the AGL tournaments and the winners from there. So from the AGL 3 through 8 winners, we have the first place teams from AGL 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 being invited. The top 16 FFA players from AGL 7, and then the top 4 teams and the top 16 FFA players from AGL 8. So, again, this is catering more towards the pro players.
Yeah, but they still have to win those invites.
But they earn the invite. Yeah, but everyone can't go out to the events. It gives them kind of an unfair advantage in some people's eyes, and I think it kind of does too. I personally don't care that much. I mean, there are pro players; they do play Halo for kind of a living, so their skills are up there. But just because you went to an event before the tournament got announced, it kind of rubs me the wrong way. I can understand if they announced that the tournament was going to happen, and they said if you place top in one of these events that you can be invited. But to go back after the fact, after everyone has been playing as if they only knew it was going to be Rooster Teeth, Gamescom, and the online competition, I'd be a little upset with this.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. I really don't care. I mean, if you're good enough at Halo to win these tournaments, I mean, then you should be able to go to the Global Championship. I mean, it's the Global Championship. It's supposed to be like the championship to end all tournaments. You know, I mean, this is the one. $200,000.
AGL is stateside. It's not global. The only global piece they've really considered is the online competition in Gamescom.
But that's why they have the online competition, so that if you didn't go to AGL, you can still do that.
Yeah, but people didn't know that AGL was going to be a requirement or a possibility into it.
Yeah, that's one of the problems I have with it, but I don't know.
I said I didn't have a problem with like having the pro players go and play. It's just the fact that they're going back in time after they announced that the tournament was even going on to these events to pull people in. And that's what kind of rubs me the wrong way.
why do you think they're doing that? Do you think they just want to get, you know, a larger tournament size? And they're just like, you know, if we go retroactively back and pull, you know, the people from AGL3 and stuff just to make it a bigger tournament? Or
I really don't know. It's weird to me, though. It just feels weird.
Do they want publicity within the AGL community? Like, could that be a possibility? Like, hey, we got some of your teams and we're putting them in the global championship. You should talk about 343 Industries more in the global championship.
I don't know, dude. But like,
that's the only thing I could guess. I'm just
I would definitely like to talk to some people about it. It just seems to people that don't have the opportunity to go to AGL, that aren't really into that whole scene of going out to events, to be kind of to hear that this was one of the qualifying criteria if you were a winner in one of these tournaments and not given as much of a fair chance from the online qualifiers, it kind of tends to tick people off.
I think what you're going to see is, you know, since the online is best of the best out of, you know, all of online, I think you're going to see that team come in and just destroy. Because, I mean, that's really the best of the best right there. Because, you know, you don't have to go out to events or anything.
We'll see what happens. I mean, there's nothing against any of the AGL winners. I mean, they are very good at Halo. So they will definitely provide a lot of entertainment, a lot of good quality games at the championship. But the fact that they're going back after they announced the tournament to pull in winners from AGL just doesn't seem right. So, anyways, at the bottom of the bulletin, we have screenshots, as always. This week's theme is the Majestic Map Pack. So there's some pretty cool ones in here, some of which I didn't even know these areas existed, primarily like the top three or so. And those are signs, more or less.
Yeah.
But there are some pretty cool effects ones. I like Loss and CS Mungun. I'm guessing that's how you say that.
System really Mungun.
System Mungun.
It's French. I just don't know how to pronounce it in French. Okay. Like, I didn't take French. I just know that it is French. I don't know.
Okay.
I like Geometric Surroundings by Prime Ordnance. I like those colors, that kind of purple and pink, like
I'm wondering
80s
how they did
neon-ish.
That. Yeah.
I don't know. The same effect that they used for Landfall 1.
I'm a big fan of Hopeless. Really, really looks like the skybox is looking great. I love
the skyboxes in these maps are brilliant,
amazing.
Yeah. So. Evac is another cool one. I like it's the black armor and it fits very well with the backdrop. Kind of the same or similar effect as Hopeless does, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. A little bit different color tone, though. A little bit different temperature on that. So, all right. Well, that is the bulletin for this week. Hopefully, by next week, they'll have the results for the first week of winners. And then we'll go on from there. But again, if you're somewhat objectively inclined, a little bit better at those game types, definitely check out next week for the Halo 4 Global Championship. All right, moving on to the main topic of this show, Spartan Assault. Now, this is a game that is only available right now on Windows 8 for computer, Windows 8 tablet, and Windows 8 phone. Slight caveat on the phone, though, is that it's only available in the U.S. if you're on Verizon. If you have a Windows phone that is not on Verizon, then you are not able to get it. But if you have a Windows tablet or Windows computer or a Windows phone anywhere else in the world, you can purchase the game and download it. And it's $7. So I went ahead and upgraded one of the main computers I have in my apartment to Windows 8 and played it over the last 2 days. And it's interesting. There are certain parts of it where I was super frustrated. I think there were two levels that took me an hour or more to play. And it was crazy. But let's start from the beginning. So we have two Spartans, Spartan Davis and Spartan Palmer, who are basically going out and This is between Halo 3 and Halo 4. So there's another sect of Covenant who have kind of broken away, broken the truce, and one of Vol's clanmates is also out there doing some dirty work. So if you remember Park Vol from Halo 4, well, there's, I think it's Meng Vol, something like that. I forget what it was.
It's like Marg.
His name was Marg Vol.
Yeah.
And he's stirring up some trouble, too. So you have a bunch of different missions in terms of you have to defend certain points, you have to attack and destroy certain objectives. There's plenty of places where you have to destroy tanks or encampments or turrets. So lots of typical things that you would play throughout the campaign, objectives and such. You get a plethora of in Spartan Assault. And one of the cool things that Spartan Assault was able to do that you can't exactly do in the console games is focus a little bit more on the objective play of Halo. So in Halo Wars, we definitely had a little bit more of that, but I think in Spartan Assault, we definitely had focus on going to objectives and doing certain things with those objectives. So we had things like where we had to plant bombs, we had to destroy wraiths, we had to destroy anti-air, we had to defend certain things. And you don't get as many of those in the console games because it's more fast-paced, you're more, it's linear where you're pretty much just running and gunning. There's not many objectives other than you have to activate some switches in order to continue on with your current objective. So one of the good things that Spartan Assault does is really exemplify what it means to have a truly objective-like playstyle for Halo. Do you get that kind of feel, Facehead?
Yeah, so, I mean, I was playing through it, and there are certain levels in the game that actually remind me of levels previously that are, you know, scattered throughout the Halos, like, you know, a certain level in Reach or a certain level in Halo 3, and I thought that was, you know, really cool, because it's like, oh, hey, this is, like, the same objective you did in, like, Savo Highway. You're like, oh, okay, destroying these wraiths. And it really took me kind of, like, in a flashback back to those moments, which, you know, I thought was actually really cool that they were doing. I don't know if anyone else got that, but...
So there were definitely remember a few flashback moments as well. Have you played the game completely yet?
No, I believe I'm about halfway through it.
Okay. This is kind of spoilerish, but I'm going to say it anyway, so if you guys don't want to hear it, skip ahead 20 seconds or so. But the last level of the game completely, total flashback from Halo 2.
Really?
Yes. See, total flashback from Halo 2.
Which is, I mean, I'm not playing the game for the story. I really, it's a top-down shooter. I think of those as, you know, your arcade type of games where it's just like rack up the points, you know, get your combos, you know, and all of that. And at least, I don't know if you guys found this annoying, but a lot of the story in between missions is told through text, which really bugged me. Because you go from, you know, the beginning of each mission where you get, like, you know, a cutscene, but then in between, you know, you have the text boxes that you read. I really wish they had, like, voiceovers going on for that, just to kind of bring you into the whole story experience.
Are you talking about when you're going between different levels?
Yeah.
Those don't really seem exactly, at least from the few I've read, those aren't specifically storyline elements. Those are just kind of like random quotes or certain facts about the timeline, but they don't directly contribute to the main story that's being portrayed in Spartan Assault.
Right.
But, and I can appreciate the style that they do with the whole motion animation stuff, but I personally don't like it that much. They did it with the Halo 4 terminals, and they did it with all the cutscenes in Spartan Assault, and I understand there's a certain artistic and visual appeal to it, but it just doesn't cut it for me.
Yeah, I completely agree. I don't know if it was like a budget choice or a restraint, but with the terminals, I kind of understood because, you know, you're going through, you know, flashbacks. It's telling the story through through the terminals. But this, I felt like, you know, it's a Spartan assault. It should be, you know, at least reminiscent of Spartan Ops. Is kind of what I went into it not knowing anything, but that's kind of what I was guessing it would sort of be like story-wise. So I was hoping for, you know, full CGI cutscenes, you know, just like in Halo 4 to lead up, you know, before your levels. So I was kind of disappointed by that. I mean, they're still really good. It's just the art style kind of, you know, might rub some people the wrong way.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with it. But again, it just, it, in my opinion, it's not like, I don't know. I personally don't like it that much.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a knock against 343. I know there's other people that like it out there, but I personally would like to see something different. In terms of gameplay from the levels, have you gotten to any of them that were just like ridiculously hard? And I don't think you have yet if you said you're only halfway there.
Actually, one of the first missions is an escort mission that I had a lot of trouble with. I mean, I was playing it with some extra skulls on, but I have noticed a few difficulty spikes. Where it just, you know, gotten to a point where, you know, turn the skulls off and, you know, like I'm said, I'm playing it for points, so that's why I'm putting them on. But yeah, not haven't had too many of those.
So I know for me, one of the missions in the D operation and one of the missions in the E operation took me over an hour each to do or to figure out when I don't think it should have taken that long.
Well, yeah, especially because this is supposed to be a mobile game as well. And I think if they're getting into the mobile market, you know, this is the first real, you know, Windows Live game that they're pushing is kind of what I've taken from this. You know, buy a Windows phone so you can play a Halo game. And I think that having levels that take an hour long on a mobile game is the wrong way to go. Maybe it's, you know, they didn't mean for it to be like that, but I mean, that's a pretty big issue for, you know, something that you might be playing on your bus ride or train to work, you know.
Right. It's not that the individual missions take that long. It's just try after try after try after try. It took me that long to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird that with how short this game is, how much variety in the gameplay style there is from mission to mission.
I do completely enjoy that. I don't really know if it's a spoiler that you get to use vehicles. Changes
no,
on the
we know that.
Yeah, yeah. I like I said, I didn't really, you know anything about the game until I saw it today, and I was like, you know what, $7, I'll get it. The vehicle levels are great. I think they are so fun. They're, at least the ones I've played, super easy. But
yes.
It changes
yes.
changes the pace, definitely, from, you know, like that. Yeah. Oh, it. The pace changes throughout the game are so far really good.
Well, it's interesting too, because you also have, whenever you're going up against a vehicle, the grenades are so freaking powerful. Where mm-hmm. in, like, if you're playing Halo 4, you chunk grenades at those things. You're lucky to even destroy it by maybe the seventh or eighth one if you have that many. But in Spartan Assault, you have three or four grenades. And here's an interesting thing. You can hold up to 9 of the types of grenades that you can have. So,
oh, I love that. You're just chucking grenades.
Right. You're just throwing grenades all day long. And, of course, the Covenant are dropping plasma grenades left and right. So there's, like, never a dull moment where you can just be tossing grenades. And there's... I'm guessing you probably already gotten to one of these missions, but there's one mission where you have incendiary grenades.
Mm-hmm.
And those are fun to play with too.
Yeah, very, very cool. I mean, gameplay wise, I think it is very good. It's exactly what a twin stick shooter, a Halo twin stick shooter should be, at least from what I've played. You know, it's exactly what I've expected.
It's pretty nice. Well, I'm actually playing it on a keyboard mouse.
As am I, but the style is, yeah.
Okay. It's pretty good how it is set up right now. I would, for the keyboard controls, I would have liked to see a little bit smoother transition between directions, because if you're moving around and if you change direction, it's immediately going to that way. I would have liked to see a little bit more of a smoother or a smoothing out motion in the whole thing with the keyboard.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of controls, controls, the fact you can't customize them really...
That kind of sucks too. There's not that many, so it's not a huge complaint.
Mm-hmm.
But with people that are used to playing PC games, they're used to being able to customize the controls. The WSAD, that's pretty standard. That's something that doesn't need to change. But the Switch weapons and the armor ability, the Switch grenades, those should have been able to be mapped somewhere else.
Right. I'm playing on a MacBook, and I'm boot camping in Windows. So, you know, regularly control is where your pinky would be, but you have the function key there, so it's over a bit. Changing grenades, man, that's
a pain, I bet.
Yeah, it's a small inconvenience for, you know, a very small population of the people who are going to be playing the game, but
boot camping it.
Yeah.
Well, another thing too that I like with the keyboard mouse setup is just the precision of the mouse.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I really do.
Now, did you say whether or not you can play this with a 360 controller hooked up to your PC?
You currently cannot.
Wow. Okay, they need to fix that immediately.
Well, so they did say before the game was even released that they were going to come out with 360 controller support for Windows 8. They just haven't done it yet, and it's supposed to come out this month. They did announce it.
Halo Fan for Life made a good point today on Twitter that other people have made before. It needs to come out on XBLA. There's no reason for this. I mean, I understand, like, exclusivity. You want it on, you know, touch devices for a little while. Like, after 2 months, there needs to be a port of it on XBLA. There's no reason not to. There's all of this money to be made. All of this money from people who, like, either don't want to play on their PC because... you got to admit, this game was developed for touch devices. It wasn't developed specifically for PC controls, mouse and keyboard, or 360 controls. But I have to assume that it would be pretty fun on a 360 controller. There's no reason for it to not be on my Xbox 360. Zero reason.
And
calling it right now. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go for it. Go for it.
Calling it right now. It'll be on Xbox One, maybe like a launch title on their Xbox Live Arcade.
That would be all right, but
I think so?
At that point, if you're trying to push the idea that the Xbox One is a next-generation system and that the graphics have improved, because one of the big kind of complaints with the next generation is that the graphics, except for maybe that Killzone demo on PS4, the next-gen graphics aren't that amazing, you know, compared to the jump we had from the Xbox to the Xbox 360 and the PS2 to the PS3. And I think if you put Spartan Assault on Xbox One, it's going to make people think, maybe this system isn't that great because graphics aren't that great. I mean, a lot of people think that way. You know, for Joe Schmo Gamer who goes to work, you know, for minimum wage, 40 hours a week, and then comes back, you know, he doesn't read up on the gaming industry news, and he doesn't care about it. He cares about graphics and video games. I mean, that's kind of the Call of Duty syndrome. And I think that they would be a little disappointed seeing Spartan Assault on Xbox One. I think if you're going to put it out, you put it out now on XBLA. Like, immediately, as soon as possible, as soon as you can get that stuff ported, like, even hand it off to a third-party studio to port it for you. You know, Gearbox did that with Halo PC. It took them, like, all of, what, 4 months? 5 months?
Mm-hmm.
So, it's not that tough.
You definitely have an interesting point there, Fazehead, about having it available day one on Xbox One. Because there's actually an article that came out earlier, I want to say it was this week, but it may have been late last week, where there's a rumor going around that because of the architecture that the Xbox One is running, which is like supposedly a modified version of the Windows 8 RT code, that you'll be able to run Windows RT apps on Xbox. It's just a rumor, but that would make a lot of sense if it would be able to be played on Xbox One.
See, yeah, that would not be surprising. You know, Microsoft is really pushing that, you know, all-in-one Encompass. You know, they're getting their phones out there. They're getting, you know, they want your Xbox One to be your full-fledged entertainment system. If they were to, you know, make your computer apps work on your Xbox apps with, you know, very little, you know, work by the developers, you know, I don't see why they wouldn't do it. Getting you know, your small arcade games that you buy for your Windows 8 PC and then having them on your Xbox One playable, you know, just like cross-platform play, that would be great. And that would be a great reason for people to buy it, you know, at least in my opinion.
Yeah. It's weird, too, because this game, you can definitely tell it's a push for Windows 8. Mm-hmm. You can definitely tell that Microsoft is trying to pull the same thing they did with Windows 2 Vista and push an OS that has not done very well in the market. But at the same time, there's a lot of people that have said they will go out and buy Spartan Assault, regardless of whether there was a small price increase or not, if it was on Xbox Arcade. Tons of money to be had there.
I would pay 1,600 Microsoft points for Spartan Assault on XBLA.
I would probably buy it again for XBLA because it would be probably double achievements on that too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I'd go 800. 800 points would be, I think,
$10. I think would be a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Real quick though, you said that we were talking about how Windows 8, you know, hasn't been big with the consumers. You just got it. Quick question. What do you think of it?
So I actually have a TechNet subscription, so I can download anything I want. So I downloaded the 8.1 preview.
Mm.
And the only reason I installed it was for that, really. For Spartan Assault. I messed around with it a little bit. I'll probably keep Windows 8, and it's actually my media PC. So it's the one that I have out for my TV, and I'll watch movies on it. But it's okay. I still really dislike the whole start menu thing.
Yeah.
I've talked to people at like work and other places about it. And even the Microsoft guys that work there don't like Windows 8. Except for one Microsoft guy. He loves it for some reason. But the rest of the Microsoft guys are like, yeah, it wasn't a very good move. And that's coming from Microsoft guys.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I never made the transition. Like, I like Windows 7. Like, I saw the stuff they were bringing out for Windows 8. I'm like, nope, it's not for me. Like, I'm fine with Windows 7 right now. I have the start button that I like. It actually does what I want it to. So right now, unless Windows 8... I mean, really, the only reason I would upgrade to Windows 8 right now is for Spartan Assault. That's it. And, I mean, I'm not willing to pay that much money for Spartan Assault.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting to play. It's definitely a fun game to play. Is it worth just getting an OS for it to play it? No. And if there's enough pressure for the community, which it sounds like there is, it seems likely that it will come out on the console. Whether it's going to be, like Facehead said, with a launch title with Xbox One, or if it eventually comes out as an XBLA title, it's going to come out on the console at one point or another, if there's enough pressure from the community.
It's not about pressure. It's about money. I mean, Microsoft loves making money. You know, they were pretty good at making money for a long time, and now they're not as good at making money. They need to realize if they want to make money, they got to give people what they want. If you put out a good OS, people will buy it. Fun facts, you know? Just because you can market something all day long, and if it is a inferior product to something you already put out, nobody's going to buy your new product. I mean, it's just a fact.
Yeah, it was a bad marketing ploy by their part, and they did the same thing happened with Halo 2 Vista. It flopped. Windows 8 actually has a worse adoption rate than Windows Vista has.
Really?
Yeah, believe it or not.
See, I'm all for giving it a try. I use it, you know, for boot camp, and it's fast. It's I am making the leap from Vista 64-bit. To this, and if anyone has used Vista 64-bit, you will know that even like Microsoft stopped supporting that. Like Microsoft programs would not work on 64-bit. So at least
and you couldn't find drivers for it either.
Yeah. You know, back in the day when I wanted to do like movies and everything, Windows Movie Maker would not work on Vista 64-bit. it would blow my mind that anyone would put out.
That's pretty bad. That's really really bad.
Yeah. And I mean, the changes with Windows 8, you know, the whole start menu is, you know, completely different. But I think what they're going for is, you know, the unification. It looks a lot like a Windows phone or a Windows tablet.
But see, you don't need that in the desktop interface. It works well for the tablet. It works well for the phone. It does not work well for the desktop or the laptop.
Right. Which 8.1, I believe, fixes a decent amount of that. You can boot to your desktop, I think. You could, or something like
that. You can?
I believe so. I could be wrong.
That'd be cool if you could. I still wish the old start menu was an option.
Yeah.
Because it really pees me off the fact that the desktop is an app. The desktop is not an app. Explorer is not an app. It's one of the underlying functions of the operating system.
I mean, I guess we'll see, you know, what Microsoft does. I think they are going to do some big reevaluations in what's important. I mean, they already did that with the Xbox One, just hearing, you know, the community, you know, make a very loud noise, you know, not necessarily deservedly in some points, but, you know, they changed a lot of their things because of that. I think once the new Xbox is out, once you see a bit more adoption to the Windows phone, and even maybe a bit more adoption to Windows 8, you're going to see them kind of reevaluate what they're doing and how they can, you know, spread that out even more.
Some of you listened to some of the podcasts that we've done about that whole thing. I want to say debacle, but it's the whole mess of Xbox One. But after everything was said and done, after like all the facts came out, I actually was a big fan for a lot of the stuff that they were proposing, because it's very much Steam-like, and Steam is very successful. Now, it didn't start out that way, but from a lot of the stuff that we've seen from Steam, it's a very successful business model for doing digital download and sharing and all that kind of stuff.
Let's be honest, Microsoft was never going to act like Valve as far as their corporate decisions and marketing decisions. I mean, have they ever acted like Valve? Ever?
No.
I mean, the reason that Steam is successful is because of the platform it's on. You know, the PC is a free-form platform. I mean, it's unrestricted by the kind of DRM things that they like to throw into consoles, you know. The PC market understands that piracy exists, and it's very easy on the PC. So in order to fight piracy, you have to market your digital downloads at a price, you know, much lower than you would get away with on consoles. I mean, on consoles, you might buy a two-year-old game for $30. You know, a two-year-old game on Steam is $3 during the summer sale. You know, I mean, it's crazy, but you're never going to get those prices on a console, ever. Like, well, they can pretend to be Steam all day long, but they'll never be able to do it because consoles are not computers, they're not PCs.
Well, that was one of the rumored things that they thought was going to happen with the new system that Xbox had, was we're going to see a lot more of those bigger sales happen.
Yeah, but I'm saying that wasn't...
And the prices drop for those games at a closer time to launch date than 3 or 4 months down the road.
I mean, it's fun to speculate what if, you know, and say, yeah, you know, if this had happened, Microsoft would have, you know, found out that they're altruistic and then love making great price deals on their sales and things. But they're still Microsoft. They're never going to be Valve, and they're never going to be Steam. And in part, I mean, it's not really their fault. It's the fact that the PC market is completely different from the console market. Now, I mean, the console market controls its own prices. That's the reason prices are so high, is because piracy on consoles is significantly lower than piracy on PCs, just because of the ease that you can pirate software on your computer. You know, it's not as easy on consoles. So people putting out games for consoles can, you know, rack their price up. But Microsoft, you know, they could get away with selling games at $10 and $15. They're never going to do that. They're going to sell games for the maximum price that they think they can get away with, digitally even, not even like actual physical copies of games. Digital downloads are still going to cost $30+ on Xbox Live. You're never going to see a Steam sale on Xbox Live. You're never going to see $3-5 games, you know, like, you know, big games too. Things like, you know, the AAA titles that come out throughout the years. You know, those games get 3 or 4 years old, people stop buying them. That's why on Steam, they're so cheap, because they figure, you know, at this point, if you haven't bought the game, you're never going to buy it. So we're just going to, you know, put it out there for $4. You might see it and say, hey, I'm going to get this game while it's $4 and I'll never play it because, hey, that's how Steam sales work. I mean, that works for that.
You also have to look at, like, the summer sales and the wintertime sales. I mean, those are crazy. And those are even with titles that just got released. They're chopping those at 25% off, 33% off, and all whatever values few and far between. It's just a different model. And I think Microsoft was actually kind of going after that. And then it was Microsoft not advertising their product very well.
All I'm saying is that I think you were expecting Microsoft to be much more generous with their sales than they ever would have been. They're still Microsoft, and they make dumb business decisions all the time. Even worse than Sony. Sony makes bad decisions, but I mean, Microsoft, as far as the dumb stuff they do, when they mess up big time.
I think they messed up, though, by going back on some of that stuff, and I think the big thing they just messed up on was the delivery of what they were doing. I think all the features and the functionality in there wasn't necessarily the bad thing out of it. It was their PR push for the new features of the console. They just didn't do it well and do it right. But that's my opinion.
No, I completely agree with that. I think most people have come upon that decision now. I don't know if you guys listen to any of the IGN podcasts, but they mostly agree with what you're saying. And the Beyond, which is their PS3 podcast, or their PlayStation podcast, I believe they had Shuhei Yoshida, which is a top guy for Sony in the PlayStation division, and they've talked to him about it. And what it sounds like is, not right now, they're not going to have, you know, huge sales, but eventually they're going to have to, you know, kill GameStop, and it will become, you know, hey, you can buy your copy of, you know, BioShock, whatever it will be, for $60 at GameStop, but hey, digital download, $50. I think we will see that maybe in a year, and then eventually, yeah, I think we will see Steam sales. Even though they have, you know, these now, you know, offline capable boxes, I still think you're going to see both Sony and Microsoft really push the online sales of games.
Yeah, the digital download stuff is definitely where it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I would definitely be on board with it. If I can get day one digital download, like if midnight rolls around and my console starts downloading that game, I will stop buying from GameStop, stop buying from Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Because Microsoft doesn't do it, but I know Sony does. They don't do preloads, though, thing.
I don't mind about preload. Like, if there was the ability just to have it queued up mm-hmm. and ready to start downloading, and they had the ability to sustain the traffic for that and download in a reasonable amount of time, then I would be perfectly okay with it.
You know what's sad? Nintendo 3DS has day one downloads. And, like, Nintendo is the worst with their online service. I mean, they're gradually getting better, but the fact that 3DS gets day one downloads and the Xbox 360 really doesn't, like, that's kind of sad. They need to fix it.
The funny thing I see from Nintendo's side of things, and we'll get back to here in the Spartan Cell here in a sec, guys, is Nintendo has a lot of interesting ideas. They just don't execute them well. Like motion control. They had that with the Wii for, what, a year and a half, 2 years before Microsoft or PlayStation came out with their motion control stuff. Like, Nintendo comes up with some very, very clever ideas that pushes the gaming realm, but their implementation just flops.
Well, that was a relatively new thing with the Wii era. I mean, traditionally, Nintendo, you know, in the early days, Nintendo defined what it meant to be a console device. You know, I mean, they are the grandfather of the console video game industry. That's why if I ever saw Nintendo, you know, run out of the hardware market, I'd be really sad because, you know, I mean, you have the NES, which led into the SNES, which led into the Nintendo 64 era, which led into the GameCube era, which then led into the Wii era. That was completely different, though. I mean, the NES through the GameCube all of those devices, except for maybe the Game Boy, weren't really revolutionary. The most revolutionary thing Nintendo did was, you know, first bring the console gaming market into the mainstream. They made the idea of owning a video game console in your house, you know, the idea of playing a video game in your house on your television was mind-blowing at the time. You know, they had consoles. They had, like, the Magnavox Odyssey. They had some other stuff that, you know, escapes my memory. But, you know, Nintendo made it cool because they were the one that said, hey, Sears, you want to sell this? And Sears was like, yeah, whatever. And so they actually got it into living rooms across the world. And that was what initially they did was revolutionary. But then from, like, the NES era through the GameCube, they really didn't do anything revolutionary. They didn't do anything that, like, really evolved the gaming industry. They just made really good video games. And then they saw that their sales were kind of staggering off because the PlayStation 2 was just kicking their ass everywhere. And they said, how do we beat Sony at their own game? So they decided they couldn't beat Sony at their own game, and they made the Nintendo DS, which was, at the time, everybody thought the Nintendo DS was going to die because it came out around the same time the PSP did. I mean, the PSP it was incredible compared to the DS. I mean, the graphics were better. You had the analog nub. You know, I mean, it was just better by its specifications. But the Nintendo DS ended up beating the PSP because it had better games. It actually had games that were fun and interesting. And that's what kind of led Nintendo off into this idea, mindset of, hey, we're going to start doing crazy stuff with our video games. And then they came out with the Wii, you know, motion controls at the time. Nobody ever thought of that. And that got real popular because all of a sudden these, you know, grandmas and grandpas that don't know how to, you know, operate an analog stick and buttons, all they have to do is move their arm and they can play a video game. And then they all got tired of Wii Sports. And then they figured, hey, everybody's over this motion control stuff. Like, how do we make the Wii U revolutionary? And they just gave it a touchpad, which is what, you know, iPod and iPhone's been doing for, you know, 5 years now. Not really revolutionary. So I'm just saying, like, Nintendo is not a revolutionary company. That's a fairly new thing. And I think if they want to actually grow their company, they're going to have to fall back on their roots and understand that the way they make money is by putting out cheap, reliable hardware with fantastic software that no other first-party video game developer can put out. That's it.
I like how we got started on this discussion all from talking about Spartan Assault pushing Windows 8 platform again.
Well, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, we're talking about platforms.
Yeah,
and
yeah. It's funny the tangents that we end up on sometimes. We go from Halo to Nintendo. Another thing I wanted to bring up, at least for you, Facehead, was for the achievements. Do you feel that they're attainable? Because I have quite a bit of them so far. I think, I don't remember how many I have. I think I have at least half.
But pull them up real fast.
For me, it's weird because there are some achievements I go look at. It's like, oh, I can do that multiplayer. Oh, I can do the multiplayer. And when I'm playing a game, it's like, oh, I can go back and get gold multiplayer. But then I think again, wait, this is a Halo game that doesn't have multiplayer. What? It's a weird feeling.
Yeah. I mean, basically, most of the achievements I've got are kind of just, you know, get, you know, a gold rating or anything. But there are some that seem very specific, almost, which, I mean, that falls in line with, you know, Halo achievements, you know, run someone over with a mongoose, get 2 kills with a Spartan laser. You know, I think they fall perfectly in line with the rest of the Halo series achievements. You know, you have your typical easy beat the game for maybe like half of them. And then you have the ones that are going to just absolutely, you know, pull your hair out. I can't believe this is an achievement type of ones, you know? I mean, just like the pulse grenade, achievement in Halo 4, I'm never going to get that. I'm also never going to earn all gold stars in this game. I just, you know, accept it.
So the gold stars one, I don't think is going to be too difficult, especially with the skull multipliers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the gold is going to be too difficult. There are some in here that are just like, I can get that, but it's just going to take quite a bit of effort. Like, I actually only have 9 out of the 20. So almost there, but, there's one in here that says, prevent all jackals from regenerating their shields in Operation B Mission 3. It's like, that's doable, but I have to be actively going for it.
Yeah, which, you know, I mean, that goes back to what some people think achievements are for, you know, playing the game in a separate, or in the way they want you to play it for sometimes. I mean, I'm perfectly okay with what the achievements, you know, I've seen so far. I mean, obviously I haven't gotten to them, some of them, but I'm okay with really tough achievements that make me go back and really, you know, you need to do this. And, you know, at least they have good descriptions, so that way, you know, like, oh, I screwed up, and then you, you know, restart, which is a very awesome thing of how easy it is to restart the level about the game, in the game.
The UI for the game is actually pretty intuitive.
Yeah, it's very well done. I was confused at first. I was like, where is everything? But once you just grasp what everything kind of means, it's very simple and intuitive.
Well, it's actually really easy to just jump straight in. The control scheme is very simple. I mean, for the mouse and keyboard, the keystrokes took a little bit to get used to, but it wasn't really that bad. It wasn't that hard to get used to the controls as I was going through the levels. And the visual style works really well. It's very fast-paced.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with how quickly you can kill enemies. And I love the ghost on there. It's so powerful.
Everything is extremely powerful.
Everything yeah.
Like, killing an elite with your assault rifle takes, like, 3 seconds. And you're just kind of like, this is wrong. Like, this should be, you know, like a 3-minute affair with him, you know, jumping around rocks. You kind of have to think of it, you know, differently since it's, you know, totally.
And then you have
game.
Those machine gun turrets. Those things are incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I freaking love those things.
Wart, wart. Wart, wart, wart. Wart, wart.
Now, I want to bring something up that I'm sure you've noticed is the microtransactions in the game. What do you think about those?
Where are the options? It's the same options for every single game.
Mm-hmm.
For every mission. I wish there were more options for me to choose from. And I haven't even gotten credits yet, and I don't even know how to get credits, so I can only pick the ones that are only unlockable via XP.
I think you have to buy the credits. I'm not sure.
But you have to buy them?
Because they're excluded from the achievements, which usually, with Microsoft certification, if the achievement requires, in the base game, a purchase, it cannot be an achievement. So they're excluding the two weapons, which is the Spartan laser and the rocket launcher, from their achievements. So I not positive.
That's kind of crappy, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah, I really don't. Since it's the same ones over and over again, I really don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a turn off, actually. If you want me to be able to choose other weapons, then give me a variety of weapons I can choose from, not just the sniper rifle and the sniper rifle alone.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's because if you load up the game and you have beaten Halo 4, it lets you know. And it's like you will have more options available to you in your loadout screen. I don't know about you, but
it said that
for me, it did say that.
I don't remember it saying that for me. And I've definitely completed the campaign on Legendary solo.
Yeah. So, and I was really confused that, you know, when you get to your loadout screen and there's 4 options and it's like, what am I missing out here? Why, like, you told me I was going to get something and, yeah. That is, I think, my biggest complaint about the game is the whole loadout and microtransactions part. Before you actually start your level or game.
I can vouch for that, yeah. On a positive note, though, how do you like that Needler?
It's awesome. As someone who loves the Needler in all its glory and, you know, through 1 through 4, I love it. You know, a good Needler is just, yeah, it makes you feel good inside.
It's a powerful
Needler.
The Needler
needs to be
too.
Buffed in Halo 4. Really, I mean, I was using it the other day. It just doesn't kill fast enough.
It's seven needles. That's all it is now. They bumped it down from what it used to be. That was the carbine. Never mind. I'm sorry. I got that confused with the carbine. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Here's the thing.
I think if the needles travel slower, they would actually latch on a little bit easier. But it's because the projectiles go so freaking fast.
Here's my deal. If I get into a fight with a dude with an assault rifle with my needler and we both start shooting at the same time, I should win if I have a needler. Like, there's no point. Like, I was getting killed by people with assault rifles while I was holding the needler just because the needler wasn't fast enough.
I think the needler in Halo 3, at least for me, is my favorite.
Yeah, that was great. I love that needler.
Maybe even in the beta. Halo 3 beta, I think it was extremely overpowered. Or it might have just been in the full game. I just remember using that thing on high ground. It's a fun weapon. And Bungie podcast or you used to read their weekly updates, they would talk about how that was like the point of the needler is that it's fun. And in Spartan Assault, once again, it's a very fun weapon to use. And, you know, that's thumbs up.
Spartan Assault kind of seems like an opportunity to make weapons that have to be normally balanced in a multiplayer environment just really, really fun to use in this kind of single-player experience where you can just mess around. I mean, they don't have to worry about balancing because it's not multiplayer. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're just killing an AI, so it doesn't matter how powerful it is. Yeah, wreck it.
The focus rifle, I still hate that thing.
One of the worst decisions ever.
Yeah.
Now, I enjoyed the focus rifle in Reach.
I didn't. I really did. No. I did not like that weapon at all. I couldn't use it.
I couldn't use it, like, real successfully, but, I mean, just using it as a... I basically thought of it as a, like, sniper rifle meets sentinel beam, which it really is. And, I mean, I couldn't get a lot of kills with it, but it was just fun to use. It's fun to, like, point a laser beam at somebody and watch them fry while you just kind of move around, you know?
It took too long to take people out, though.
And you had the...
Yeah, I couldn't aim with it.
You know? Anyone would see across the map, you're like, oh, well, there's the focus laser. You know?
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people, you know, used it in general, so...
Penn's in the chat says, how was dual-wielding the SMGs? It was pretty fun. Definitely just a spray of bullets everywhere. Very effective against grunts. Quite effective against elites. Not very great against jackals. But it was fun to have the dual SMGs in there. Cause you're just like unloading everything.
Well, yeah, because if people who are listening don't know, there is no reload in the game. It's
right.
Just pick up ammo and it's, you know, constant stream. I mean, with the assault rifle, you can shoot out, I think it's 265 bullets at a single time. Even that is just, it's a great feeling. It's such a, you feel so powerful. And I don't know why, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, there's a lot of weapons in here that are really cool. The focus rifle, don't really care for. The brute shot, I'm content. But the implementation of it in the game just seems... Because it fires so slow. Have you had a mission yet where you've used the brute shot?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay, so you wouldn't know yet. It fires super slow.
It's what I've noticed that about the pistol.
The pistol fires pretty decently fast.
Really?
It's not quite that fast, though. I would like it to be a little bit faster.
Yeah, I mean, I'm used to, pull a trigger and fire, you know.
I really don't think you could do that with a twin stick, though.
Yeah, you're right.
I think the speed would be too fast. I think it needs to be sped up just a tad from its current implementation, but having it as fast as you can actually pull it within, say, like Halo 4,
mm-hmm.
that I don't think it would work that well with the twin stick shooter mentality, and even on the keyboard mouse maybe a little bit more, but the twin stick thing, yeah, I don't think it would work as well.
Yeah, that's what we have to keep in mind is these are, you know, on your Windows 8 tablets and your phones, so
yeah,
you know, that would just be like as fast as you can tap, which that would be insane.
Yeah. What else? The Scorpion tanks and the Wraiths. All the vehicles are fun to drive, really.
Mm-hmm. They have a... It takes you back to almost... I'm trying to think of which Halo game it is. I think it's either 3 or Reach, where once you get in a vehicle, you feel unstoppable. I can't remember which one
it is. That was 3.
Yeah, it had to have been 3. Yeah.
Oh, because you can kill anything with a BR or DMR in Reach.
Or
a
sniper, yeah.
Yeah. You know, you get that feeling again of just like, I am able to kill everything and anything without, you know, dying. And it's one of those, you know, flashback moments.
Well, I remember when in Halo 3 they had that one guy that was setting records on kill streaks with the Goshawk, and he went 107-0 on standoff. Do you remember that at all? Do either of you guys remember that?
No.
No.
But I can definitely see that happening. Like,
yeah.
That's crazy.
107-0 in the Goshawk on standoff.
I think the highest I ever did was 38-0 in a chopper on Sand Trap. And that was like the greatest night of my life.
I wish vehicles had that kind of prowess back in Halo, and I want to see that in Halo 5 personally. I think we have everything wrapped up in terms of the Spartan Assault stuff. Don't want to get too much into spoiler territory in terms of the story. We can talk about that a little bit later. But from a gameplay aspect, it works pretty well. I think the twin stick thing, it probably works a little bit better. Of course, I don't have a tablet or phone to play it on, so I can't really judge for that. Gameplay is smooth. The pace of the game is very arcade style. The weapons are fun to play with. The vehicles are fun to play with. There was one extra armor ability in there, and I wanted. Have you gotten across or come across the stun armor ability yet?
No, I have not.
Okay. There's another armor ability. I think this is the only like additional one in there, because there's sprint, regen, hologram, and active camouflage. But there's another one in there called stun. And basically, it emits this kind of shockwave that's about 10, 15 meters.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that gets enveloped in that is basically stunned for 4, 5, 6 seconds. And they just stand there, and it has like the little shocks going on over it. So it's like, for about 5, 6 seconds. And you can go around killing them. They give it to you on missions where you need to use it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very, very interesting armor ability.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if anyone's listening who's, you know, on the fence, if you have something to get it on, be it, you know, your Verizon Windows phone or your Windows 8, you know, PC, I definitely say pick it up. You know, it's $8. $7. You're going to get your money's worth out of it easily. It's a fun game. You know, if you ever have played an old, you know, arcade-like twin-stick shooter, you know, Smash TV or... you know, the Black Ops 1. It's just a fun time. You know, it takes you back to, you know, scores are high. You want your combo streaks, you know. And, I mean, really, you were talking how it might not be a push, you know, push enough for someone to get Windows 8. I think if someone was on the fence, had the money to, you know, go out and buy a copy, that might be just the little push that they need. It's definitely worth it if you're thinking about upgrading.
Okay, I can see that.
Like, what kind of sad individual is on the fence about Windows 8? like, what kind of dude is just sitting there like, yeah, man, like, I understand that, like, a lot of people don't like Windows 8, but, like, a lot of people do have Windows 8.
So that's just...
And then there's Spartan Assault, but then, like, if I get Windows 8, the start button will just take me back to this thing that I don't really want to go to, but then I get to play Spartan Assault.
So, again, that's just for the PC. That's not necessarily for tablets or phones.
Yeah, but then they even like cut down their potential user base by making it Verizon only. Like, a lot of people don't got Verizon. I'm saying like the entire way that they have released this game. And I'm not saying it's a bad game. I haven't played it yet. It looks like a fun game. I want to play it right now. I can't because I don't have a Windows 8 PC. I don't have a tablet or a smartphone. If I did, I wouldn't have Verizon anyway. I mean, it's just this whole like set of you know, barrel, like hurdles you got to jump over to play Spartan Assault. And it shouldn't be that way. If you play Xbox, you should be able to get on your Xbox 360 and download this right now and be able to play it. It's that simple. There's no, I mean, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to keep it on tablets and mobile phones and Windows 8 PCs when you have this whole set of people on Xbox 360, even if they hated Halo 4. Let's assume that everybody who plays Xbox 360 hates Halo 4, which isn't the fact, but I'm just for fun. Like, if they hated Halo 4, this has nothing to do with that game. This is a completely different genre of game. This is a twin-stick shooter. You know, there's a lot of people on Xbox Live who, like me, you know, I played Robotron 2024. I know how to play twin-stick shooters. I know what's up. I mean, the biggest Xbox Live arcade game of all time, or at least it was back in the day, Minecraft probably beat it, but back in the day, it was Geometry Wars.
And oh, yeah, that's right.
That's a twin-stick shooter. Like, mm-hmm. There's no reason to not get this on Xbox Live Arcade, make a whole bunch of money, and then start the sequel. I don't know what Microsoft's problem is except trying to sell Windows phones. That's the only thing. And even then, they need to, like, cut off from Verizon. That's never a good idea to get a kind of exclusive deal going with a single-cell carrier. I mean, go ask Apple how that whole AT&T deal with the iPhone for the first, you know, 3 years or 4 years went. I mean, it was kind of sad. People were waiting for that thing to get off the contract just so they could have an iPhone on a service that wasn't AT&T.
Yeah.
It's really surprising that it's Verizon that has the exclusivity rights, because before, I don't know if you guys follow this. I mean, I'm looking into getting a Windows phone, you know, switching from an iPhone, but they had problems with Verizon because Verizon puts bloatware on all of their devices, no matter really who makes it. And Windows was
every like, carrier does it though. Carrier does it.
So Sprint or AT&T doesn't do that with Windows phones to a degree. Verizon wanted to do it to a degree where there was a huge delay on Windows phones on Verizon for that reason. So they maybe when they, you know, made peace, they were like, hey, also, we'll give you an exclusive for Halo if you finally let us release our phones.
Yeah. So it does kind of suck. I'm wondering what exactly is the reason behind that. But I mean, like we've said, I still think it needs to come out for Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone's kind of saying at this point it needs to come out for Xbox.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, any last comments about the game? Any last questions or anything from the audience? Because if not, I think that pretty much wraps up the show for tonight.
I mean, hey, seriously, guys, go out and buy it. It's a fun game.
It is fun. You know? It is fun.
It's cheap, you know, for a game, and it's definitely worth playing.
Cool. All right. Well, that concludes our podcast for tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for those who tuned in live, or for those who downloaded. Thank you for downloading the show, taking the time out of your day to listen to us talk about some Halo goodness. We do our podcast on Thursdays and release on Fridays, sometimes Saturdays, depending on how busy my schedule is, but it's usually out within a day or so. And we record on Thursdays live at 8 o'clock when we open the lobby. Start by 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. So if you are around and want to listen to us live and join some of the live shenanigans that partake before and after the show, definitely head on over to our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/podtacular. You can also find us on other social media websites such as Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. And you can also find us on our homepage, podtacular.com, where you can submit a story or question or anything to us using the big green button. Or if you want to just do it from your email client, you can send an email directly to us at submissions@podtacular.com. Or if you actually want to be heard on the show, have your voice put in glorious podcasting format, then you can call our listener voicemail at 240-200-4256. That's Halo at the end, so 240-200-HALO, and leave a message about 90 seconds long with your question, story, comments, anything Halo-related, anything Xbox-related, or anything related to anything we've talked about on the shows prior. While we do the show for free, we appreciate any help that you guys are willing to throw your way in terms of donations. We have a PayPal button on the homepage where you can go and donate some money to us directly, securely, if you feel so inclined. Helps us pay with the hosting bills and some of the other stuff that we do when we go to conventions. So if you feel the need to give, then we would appreciate it. If not, then we just appreciate the support for downloading the show, listening to us, and sharing us with your friends on Facebook, Twitter, and however else. Now, I haven't been a big proponent of this in the past, but since other podcasts seem to do it, especially ones that we've had on recently, we'll go ahead and do it anyways. Go over and leave a rating review on iTunes and help us out over there a little bit. That would be much, much appreciated.
If you leave a review, only leave a good one. If you're going to leave a bad review, just forget about it. You know,
no,
do whatever else you were
no.
doing. Yep. If you're going to leave a bad one, just don't do it. Just think to yourself, you know, if you don't got anything good to say, don't say it at all and just leave it alone. No, I'm just kidding. You say whatever you want about our podcast. Criticism always helps. You know,
yes, it does.
You never, when you get too close to a project, you never seem to see the faults in it. And everybody else does. So,
right. So leave us a review. Give us some feedback. Let us know what you think of the show. Let us know if you want anything added to the show or if there's some corner of the Halo universe that we're not covering enough that you want us to cover. Definitely let us know. Speaking of corners of the universe, our buddy Greenskull over at Ready Up Live is also running a little contest. You can go over to his YouTube channel, youtube.com/ReadyUpLive, and look at one of his latest videos, which he's actually giving away some pretty cool Halo swag. So if there's anything that you may want to get your hands on in terms of some cool Halo stuff, he has some bumper stickers, some hats, and a couple other things, then definitely go over to their YouTube channel. Their website is also ReadyUpLive.com, and check that out. And with that, we're going to go ahead and say goodnight, everybody. Thanks again, one last time, for tuning in to our show. And we will see you guys next week for our Destiny podcast.
Oh, man, I'm excited
for
that.
We'll have the guys from Guardian Radio on the show. So,
oh, man,
it's going to be a fun podcast.
Are you ready for Destiny? Because I
am so ready for Destiny.
I am ready for Destiny.
My body.
How about you, Facehead?
I was just in Seattle. I visited Bungie on the outside. Some of the guys walked in, gave him a head nod. It's one of the best experiences of my life.
Awesome. All right. Until next time, guys, keep on fragging Windows 8.
Yes, frag Windows 8 all day, every day. Keep on fragging Verizon.